Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
It was back in May when CDC Director Rochelle Walensky said that life can return to normal for those who are fully vaccinated.
If you are fully vaccinated, you can start doing the things that you had stopped doing because of the pandemic. We have all longed for this moment when we can get back to some sense of normalcy.
Across the nation, people heeded CDC advice, left their masks at home, and headed out to shops, restaurants, bars, and gyms. A little over 6 weeks later, with the Delta variant surging, people were advised to put their masks back on in communities with rising cases. And indoor mask mandates returned for many of us. Here's the president's chief medical advisor, Dr. Anthony Fauci, speaking at the time on PBS NewsHour.
We know now, as a scientific fact, that they can transmit the virus to an uninfected person. It's for that reason that the CDC made the change in recommendation that if you are vaccinated, if you are in an indoor setting, you should still wear a mask.
And as of today, everyone in the state of Oregon must wear a mask when getting together in public, even when they are outdoors. But indoor dining and large public gatherings are still okay. HuffPost journalist Jonathan Cohn says it wasn't supposed to be like this.
We all were thinking about this fall would be when we got back to normal. You know, we'd be back in school, back in events. And now here we are, we're weeks away, and we're still dealing with this pandemic. We are still talking about, are we going to have closures? What are we going to do to get people vaccinated? When do you wear a mask? When don't you wear a mask? Can you go indoors? And I think it's confusing. It's draining. It's depressing after all this time that we're still dealing with this.
It's confusing because scientists are learning about the strange shape-shifting virus day by day, and they're doing it in the full glare of a world desperate for an end to the pandemic. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store, in for Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. This hour, this moment in the pandemic, and the twists and turns of scientific inquiry. Joining me from Ann Arbor, Michigan, is Dr. Preethi Malani, Chief Health Officer and Professor of Infectious Diseases at the University of Michigan. She's also Associate Editor of the Journal of the American Medical Association. Dr. Malani, welcome.
Thank you, Kimberly.
And also with us from Augusta, Maine, is Dr. Nirav Shah, Director of the Maine CDC and President of the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. Dr. Shah, welcome to you too.
Thank you, Kimberly. It's an honor to be with you.
So I'm going to start with you, Dr. Shah. You heard everyone in the open express what I think a lot of Americans are feeling. There was an excitement when the vaccines came, and all of a sudden this backslide into uncertainty. We thought the fall would look normal. What are you hearing from folks? Are you seeing the same confusion?
Well, you know, as I talk to my counterparts across the country at state health departments, as well as my colleagues and friends in academia and elsewhere, we too are seeing the same concerning signs in the data. One of the jobs of state health officials is to take those data and then translate it into what it means for the individuals who reside in our various states and cities and jurisdictions. And when I do that, I attempt to acknowledge that this summer was not what any of us thought it was going to be. And moreover, it seems like every day we learn or hear something that in some senses contradicts what we were told just a couple days or weeks ago. And that feeling of being whipsawed from one thing to another is, I think, part of the reason why there's more than just confusion. There's outright fatigue. And I think it's fair to say a lot of people are done with the pandemic in every way possible. So that's what we're hearing. The goal right now is to keep folks with us because we're not through this yet. And it could be weeks, if not months, before things start subsiding. The goal that my colleagues and I across the state are trying to effectuate is how do we keep people on board with best public health recommendations, as well as to urge folks who are on the fence to get vaccinated.
And Dr. Milani, how do you send a message to folks trying to keep them on the right track when there is so much understandable confusion?
Yeah, thank you, Kimberly. And I'm just thinking about the intro comments, that idea of return to normalcy. And you know, for the U.S. pandemic, it's really been about 18 months and counting. And I think many people are still searching for this moment where magically we're going to go back to the before. And like with many tragedies, many events, the after is never going to be quite the same. And the good news is there's optimism long term, but this uncertainty is difficult. And I think one of, you know, even by pandemic standards right now, as people are trying to get back to school and back to work, there's so much churn. I think that's created angst and anxiety. But you know, what I've sort of talked about throughout the pandemic is figuring out how you can safely do this now, but understanding is as the pandemic changes, our approach needs to change, but that I continue to be optimistic long term as we move to endemicity, this idea that we can live alongside the virus, but we have a long way to go.
Yeah. So among these changes that that we've been talking about have been really, really good news, things that have happened in recent weeks. One is the Pfizer vaccine received full FDA approval. There is hope that the other vaccines will also get that soon. Also good news on booster shots. Booster shots are coming for the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine, and tests on the Johnson & Johnson booster seem positive. In other countries like the UK, younger people are able to get vaccinated. Dr. Shaw, are these updates, these advancements, these bits of good news likely to encourage more people to get vaccinated? Is that the ultimate goal?
Well, it certainly is the ultimate goal. And I think many of these favorable pieces of news that we've heard just this past week will have the effect of bringing some folks who are on the fence off that fence and ultimately prompt them to go get vaccinated. There are open and good questions about what the magnitude of that effect will be. Will it be just a few percentage points of those who have not been vaccinated, or will it be sizable? And that's an interesting and important question. It's ultimately an empirical one. And soon in the near future, we'll have better data based on what folks' response to these pieces of good news have been. I'm optimistic, generally speaking, and particularly here. At a minimum, the approval, the full approval of the Pfizer vaccine, for many people removes an obstacle that they had. Even for those who said that they would get the vaccine, but use that as a pretext, the approval gives clinicians, public health officials, an opportunity to dig a layer deeper. If it wasn't that you were waiting for the FDA approval, then what was it, in fact, that is hesitating you to get a vaccine? So either way, we'll learn more, and in particular, we'll learn about the magnitude of this effect.
And at the same time that we have these positive developments, cases are also going up. There are currently more than 100,000 people in the United States who are hospitalized with COVID-19. Dr. Milani, talk about, just as someone in public health, how do you message to people amidst the uncertainty while we have a vaccine and all this good news? Also, cases are going up. How do you, how do you transverse this uncertainty yourself as a health official?
Yeah, and cases are going up, but they're not going up uniformly. And if you look at least the U.S. maps, there's a inverse likelihood of how many cases, and particularly severe cases. Again, cases are going to go up, I think, especially as kids and college students and others get back to things. But you know, I try to message not just about the vaccine protects you, it protects everyone around you, it helps, even if vaccine effectiveness is less, it's very, very effective still for severe infection. hospitalizations and deaths. But what I find, Kimberly, is that there's like two groups. One, that they feel like they can't really get back to normal activity because of their perceived risk as being very high. And then there's others who feel like, well, I'm not really worried about COVID. I'm not going to let it ruin my life. So I'm not getting vaccinated. I'm not going to wear a mask. My difficulty is trying to get everyone to the middle. And I'm sure Dr. Shah deals with this as well on a daily basis. But what I also message on are risks that we can manage. We can't manage every risk. And frankly, the risk of COVID is one of the few that we can manage. And I don't just talk about health. I talk about disruptions, family disruptions with kids getting sick and classes being canceled, but also economic disruption. And I think the economic piece is one that I'm talking about a lot, because public health is economic health.
And Dr. Shah, talk a little bit about that. I mean, and also the fact that, you know, the changing in the science, the changing in the recommendations is not unusual, but that's something that usually happens in a closed process. Because this is a pandemic, it's happening out in public view.
That's exactly right. I just want to note one point that Dr. Molani made, which I think is really important. Sometimes in public health, we have a notion that it is we say things like follow the science, which is important, and that is what we should and actually do. But it's also important to recognize that vast numbers of folks out there don't follow or are not motivated simply by numbers, data, and science. A lot of people base their decisions not just on numbers, but on stories, metaphors, and allegories. And so the notions that Dr. Molani mentioned about disruption in schools or economic disruption, those are important to couple with the sometimes sterile numbers around vaccine efficacy. That's what we try to do as we're urging folks to get vaccinated. And indeed, in the midst of a pandemic, to your question, Kimberly, there is this notion that that the scientific community should have known every single thing about COVID-19 on the very first day the very first case was diagnosed. And that's driven in part sometimes by the notion that science is an absolute enterprise and that it deals in finality as much as it deals in facts. And that's just not the case.
I'm going to pause you there, and we're going to talk more about that on the other side. We're talking about this moment in the pandemic with a lot of good news about scientific progress, but also bad news as the Delta variant rages. When we come back, we'll talk about the confusing, seemingly contradictory facts and guidance we are learning along the way. Tell us what you are seeing and hearing in your community on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. We're trying to make sense of all the news around COVID and the pandemic. My guests are Dr. Nirav Shah, Director of the Maine CDC, and Dr. Preethi Malani, Chief Health Officer at the University of Michigan. And Dr. Shah, I want to get back to you about the point healthcare officials and scientists are dealing with building the plane while they're flying it in terms of getting this information and understanding the science of COVID-19.
Sure, Kimberly. Sorry for going over a bit there. But, you know, you're right. It is commonplace to say now that we have been building the plane as we fly it. And now we've hit a bit of turbulence. And as things change, there are those that view those changes as evidence that nothing can be known and scientists have no idea what they're doing at all. This is clearly not correct. And intuitively, people get this. If you were to take a loved one to an oncologist, and that oncologist were to say, you know, I'm here to treat your mother's cancer, but I want you to know that I don't like to change my mind. I don't like to appear as I'm weak-willed or flip-floppy. And so I haven't changed the way that I practice oncology since 30 years, since when I graduated from medical school, because I don't want to give you the impression that I'm changing my mind on stuff. I think you would all say, well, that's crazy. I'm going to someone who reads the latest data, even if it means it's different. We intuitively get that science, medicine, and public health change. But in the midst of a pandemic, we haven't done a good job of signaling to people that what we know today may be different from what we know tomorrow.
And sometimes we hear opposing, contradicting information from even our leaders. So, for example, last week, the administration announced that fully vaccinated Americans can and should get a booster shot. Here was President Biden getting that message out to the country.
8 months after your second shot, get a booster shot. These booster shots are free. We'd be able to get the booster shots at any one of approximately 80,000 vaccination locations nationwide. It will be easy. Just show your vaccination card and you'll get a booster.
But Dr. Malani, the WHO then warned that people in countries where the booster is available should try to wait until other places that don't have access to even the first shot, the folks there can get fully vaccinated. So what do you make of this contradicting guidance?
Yeah, Kimberly, I think it, you know, again, I'm just reflecting on Dr. Shah's comments. You know, something that gets lost in all of this is the notion that we're dealing with a novel coronavirus. No one has experienced a COVID-19 pandemic before. And we are flying the plane and building it or building the bridge as we're walking. And, you know, with the announcement around third doses and boosters, I think it's created some confusion and likely some perhaps resentment around the world, because there are many places that still don't have access to vaccines. Even healthcare workers are not fully vaccinated in some locations. And I think from the clinical side, it's also there's considerable confusion because people are wondering, and my phone is lighting up with people asking. And what I've said is hold tight, let's get more information, because that announcement was made, but there wasn't a lot of detail around that. And, you know, the other thing that I say is, yes, perhaps we need third doses, but we need first doses in people. And I hope that doesn't get lost in that, because we may feel safer getting third doses. But again, vaccination is not really about protecting ourselves. It's about protecting everyone around us. And in many ways, you know, you could get three doses or four doses and still not be protected if there's out of control virus around you. And, you know, vaccines are an important tool, but they're just one tool. And so I think all of the messaging can be very complicated. And again, I'm sure people around the world look at us in amazement sometime that there are people who don't want to be vaccinated.
We're going to talk a little bit more later about people sort of creating their own science in a time of uncertainty. But I want to focus, since we're talking about boosters now, on this issue a little bit. Dr. Malani, what would you advise that people do? Because these are two messages, get the booster or wait. There are also people who are concerned about, okay, what if they got the Johnson & Johnson shot? That booster is going to be available later. What should they try to do in the meantime? Will they be safe? What are you telling people about the booster specifically with what you know right now?
So, and what I'm telling them right now today may be different on Monday or
Understood.
Even under the weekend. So, but what I am saying right now is if you fall under that limited list of individuals who are moderately to severely immunocompromised, go and get your additional dose now. And again, most of those folks have had one of the mRNA vaccines. But to be honest, we don't really know what to do among those who've had the J&J vaccine. And, you know, fortunately, it's not a lot of people who fall under that category. For everyone else, I've been saying just hang tight. But I know people are starting to make appointments. And I point out that I am actually one of the people that will hit that 8 month pretty early. It's coming up in a few weeks for me. But I'm hoping to get more clarity next week. And, you know, frankly, I think we are going to be, particularly in nursing homes and healthcare workers, we're likely going to be doing that. But at this moment today, I haven't said go out and get the dose yet.
And Dr. Shah, I want to ask you the same question. You know, I know folks who, like me, I got the Johnson & Johnson shot. I had a friend who found a way to, after the Johnson & Johnson shot, to get a Moderna shot after that, which I, you know, thought, wow, I wouldn't have occurred to me to do that. And we don't even know that that is safe. But for the people, including the people who got the Johnson & Johnson shot, who's, where there seems to be a lot less information coming out about what to do next, what do you advise people to do?
What we've told folks here in Maine, certainly as Dr. Malani noted, we've had a lot of questions about it. What we've indicated to folks is that as part of the normal scientific process for studying any type of treatment, we want to make sure we've got data to show that it's both safe and effective. Just yesterday, in fact, Johnson & Johnson did, or 2 days ago, Johnson & Johnson did, in fact, put out some data from an early trial. Now, they did so in a press release, and I generally don't like to make policy based on data in a press release. But what they did publish and what they did put out was encouraging. And what I've told folks here in Maine is as those data are fully published, peer-reviewed, and then reviewed by experts at the US CDC and the FDA, we'll know more about what folks who got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine should do. But I've coupled that with what I think is a really critical message. Dr. Malani alluded to this. Those who have received the vaccine of any sort, any of the three, still remain exquisitely well protected against severe disease or hospitalization. That the number that we've all focused on, 91, 84, 81, that number may have come down a bit, but it's come down from a place of being higher than any of us thought it would be. So even if you did get a Johnson & Johnson shot early on back in March, you remain quite well protected. The booster will help that, but it's not as if you're out in the cold right now.
Okay. And just before we move on that point about that there is very good protection offered even without the booster, Dr. Shah, why then are numbers going up in terms of infections, and the number of hospitalizations is pretty high, even more than a year ago before the vaccine? Why are those two things happening at the same time?
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that, because that is one reason, going back to this whipsawing effect, that people are looking around saying, wait a minute, vaccination rates are going up, but cases are going up. And how do we reconcile those two? Well, here in Maine, and as I talk to my colleagues across the country, my counterparts, what we're finding is that it's largely the unvaccinated individuals who are experiencing new cases and finding themselves in the hospital. For example, one of the largest hospitals here in Maine, based in Portland, every single one, as of yesterday, every single one of their patients in the ICU was someone who was unvaccinated. So what we are seeing right now is this heterogeneity, where individuals who are fully vaccinated are uncommonly experiencing breakthrough cases, but they're not driving the pandemic. What's driving the pandemic is the Delta variant wreaking havoc among unvaccinated individuals.
Okay, so we're at a point now where governments and corporations are beginning to require masks and require vaccinations in some cases. Delta CEO Ed Bastian announced this week that with the full FDA approval of the Pfizer vaccine, the airline is imposing stricter rules on its employees to keep employees and passengers safe. Here he is on CNN.
First and foremost, we're going to make certain that any unvaccinated employee is wearing a mask at all times in our operations. Yep. Secondly, starting in 2 weeks, every employee that's not vaccinated is going to have to submit to a test to confirm that that person is not infected. And third, and I think very importantly, starting November the 1st, we're going to implement an insurance surcharge such that if you're not vaccinated at that point, we're going to add a $200 monthly premium surcharge onto your health insurance costs, because this is not just costing lives, this is costing us financial resources as well.
So, Dr. Malani, is this where we'll really see changes happening now that you have this FDA approval of the Pfizer vaccine? Now, do you expect that if governments and the private sector both move to impose more requirements, will that help stem some of these infection rates or at least encourage more people to get vaccinated?
No, Kimberly, I do. I do think these mandates or requirements, whatever you want to call them, or nudges are going to be, first of all, they're going to be increasingly common. And they're also likely going to drive people to get vaccinated in a way that public health messaging hasn't necessarily done. And in fact, in the United States, it's likely that you can't get to the levels you need without some sort of economic incentives. And we've talked about this on our campus, University of Michigan campus. We began with students in the residence halls. And then about a month ago, we announced that everyone would be required, you know, with, of course, allowances for exemptions for medical and religious reasons. And then again, having policies in place to try and track all of it. But, you know, ultimately, I think we are going to see a lot more of this, and that approval certainly stemmed a number of new announcements. So just in the last few days, and it would have been nice to get there without it. But that economic piece that we talked about earlier, and I think that's a lens that we don't look through enough. If your business gets disrupted because you have a COVID outbreak, or you just end up with people in quarantine, that costs money. And, mm-hmm. and again, here it wasn't a requirement. It was saying, okay, you can avoid vaccination if you don't want it, but we're going to charge you more.
Yeah. So we have a question from a listener on Facebook, Sheila Perloff Edison. She asks, my question is about the hospitality industry in Maine and why aren't vaccines or negative COVID tests mandated? It would make those in the hospitality business much clearer with our guests. Dr. Shaw, there in your state, what do you say to Sheila?
Well, as Dr. Malani just noted, there is nothing that prevents any particular employer from requiring that their staff be vaccinated or at least making that a condition of employment. Now, whether the state, capital S or lowercase s, should step in and make that a requirement, that's the open question right now. Now, we've done so already for healthcare workers across the state. If you're a healthcare worker in Maine, we have issued a rule, an emergency rule, indicating that you've got to be vaccinated given the fragility of the patients that you encounter, as well as the fact that we want to enact something along the lines of force protection for our healthcare workforce. Where we go from here in terms of mandates or conditions of employment for vaccine, that's an open question for all states. And I think every single governor in the country right now is thinking through what that balance should be between requiring vaccines in different sectors, be it hospitality, be it education, or leaving it up to local control or individual businesses' control. I don't think we have an answer as to where that line will be drawn.
Now, you're saying you think that every governor is making these calculations. We are seeing in some states, like in Florida or Mississippi, the governor's actually doing the opposite. They're really mm-hmm. pushing back and banning mandates for masks and vaccines. What's your reaction to that?
You know, I think there are, well, a few things. You know, Dr. Malani noted a moment ago that in public health, we often take a stair-step approach. And we've done the same with respect to COVID vaccinations. We started with earnest education, with the facts, then campaigns designed to encourage vaccination, then those changed to a bit of more fear-based campaigns. X number of people are in the hospital without vaccines. And now we're using the next tool, which is mandates. Every single jurisdiction is going to make a different decision based on their local values. I happen to disagree on a personal level with the decisions of some elected leaders to ban mandates. My view is that those decisions should ultimately be made by the actors on the ground, be it a school district, a business. But again, I also recognize that every state has different politics.
And Dr. Malani, I know that the politics of the pandemic has played out in the state of Michigan as well, but how are things going on the campus at the University of Michigan as well as in the state?
You know, so They're going well, actually, which is good news, because that has not always been the case. As people may remember, Michigan as a state was hit very hard, very early in the spring of 2020. And it was a different time. And, you know, I think about what's happening in Florida, and it's difficult to compare, but the Florida right now in particular, and some of the other Southeast states. But at that point in Michigan, people also really took it to heart to stay home, and really the pandemic and the curve was bent. And then we had another surge in the spring. And, you know, right now, if you look at our case rates, hospitalizations and deaths, and the rates by 100,000, we're actually among the best states. And the University of Michigan, for our incoming students in the residence halls, we're at 99% vaccination or in process. Some of our international students weren't able to access vaccine where they were. And we're about to start classes. And I am very optimistic that we're going to be able to be in a good position to not see major disruptions, which, again, that doesn't mean zero cases of COVID. If success is zero cases of COVID, then no one is going to be able to meet that bar. There are going to be cases, some will be severe, and overwhelmingly, those are going to be in people who are unvaccinated. And, you know, I have to say that we're not seeing that population hospitalized in our state either, just like Dr. Shah mentioned in Maine. So I'm hopeful, in fact, that our little pocket here in Ann Arbor is probably one of the most vaccinated communities in the United States and really around the world, is that we're going to be able to continue our core mission of education, research, and clinical care.
All right. We're taking stock of this moment in the pandemic, trying to get a clearer picture of what we know and what we should do. When we come back, we'll talk about how research into the disease happening in real time makes public health messaging harder. And I'll ask, what can the CDC and others do to better inform the public? I'm Kimberly Atkins-Storr. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Seen. Listen and follow Last Seen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Storr. I'm speaking with Dr. Nirav Shah, director of the Maine CDC, and Dr. Preethi Malani, chief health officer at the University of Michigan. And we're talking about why the science around COVID and the advice we're getting from scientists is so confusing. So I want to delve into how hard it is to try to communicate this complicated story to the public. And I think right now, as we're going into fall, there are a few areas where that's more difficult than when it comes to schools, especially with with parents of younger children who are not yet vaccinated. So I want to start with you, Dr. Malani. How do parents even begin to know what to do when there's still so much uncertainty?
Yeah, and this has been a really challenging year and a half, I think, for everyone, but particularly for parents of young kids who, you know, largely were relegated to virtual learning for many of them. And one of the things I've talked about is really trying to figure out how to safely get back the things we do, even if they look a little bit different, and that accepting some risk, because, for example, the return to face-to-face learning is not a zero-risk proposition, but there's also the potential for great benefits. And besides talking about vaccination and masks, this is really where community spread has to be kept in check. But, you know, again, it's a little bit easier for me to say that because I live in a community where, you know, masks are not a problem for people, and the K-12 schools will have masks. And again, I focus on those potential benefits versus the risk. And, you know, the truth is that we're not going to really have this moment, even when, let's say, vaccines become available for younger kids, which estimates, you know, maybe later this year, maybe early next year, that isn't going to turn things around either. And so how can you get back to things in a way that's thoughtful? And, you know, I will say many, many school districts have done this in a way that's very successful, because there's a real downside to not getting back to face-to-face school. And again, I can accept some risks, but we have to really be all in on trying to mitigate this together and understanding what's there. And, you know, with public health, that messaging about what I do affects you and what you do affects me, that doesn't go over well necessarily some places.
And I want to get to two messages from listeners from Facebook to sort of get where different people are, how they're in different spaces in this moment. Terry Fortman writes, I think the scientific community has done a wonderful job in keeping us informed, and I felt no confusion. I wish every state required all of their school children to wear masks. Then on the other side, you have Danny Tao, who writes, if science is uncertain, why shouldn't you let people make their own decisions? Do we need a nanny state? How much freedom are we willing to forfeit for safety? So, Dr. Shaw, I want to turn to you with those opposing ideas. One saying make a requirement for masks, others saying if there's uncertainty, let people make their own choices. How do you navigate that?
Well, those two comments quite well exemplify something of the divide culturally and scientifically that we've all experienced during COVID-19, 20, and now COVID-21. And it makes it a challenge for public health officials, of course, because we're speaking to an entire state and recognizing that there is a certain degree of polarity within every state, as exemplified by those comments. So navigating threading that needle becomes a challenge because we have an obligation to respect many different views. Per our earlier note, the way that as with many polarized views, what we find is that the truth is somewhere in the middle of those things. I am delighted that Terry has not found confusion. That's great news. At the same time, I can certainly acknowledge why others feel differently. There is a notion out there that masking within schools will help. We have certainly recommended that. The question is, who should be the decision maker on that? At the other side, you've got someone who's indicating that if there is uncertainty any degree, we should chuck the entire enterprise out the window. That's not the case, right? No one should do that. If you operate under that epistemological principle, you wouldn't even get out of bed in the morning because there'd be too much uncertainty. So that's certainly not the case. And thus, even when there's uncertainty, we don't automatically default to letting folks do whatever they want. We still think that there should be guardrails. And so as with so many of these polarized views, the difficulty is that the truth is usually somewhere in the middle, but folks don't like to be in the middle. And nowadays, particularly based on the way that people consume information and news, they are driven to polar places. And that's, I think, part of the reason we've had a challenge. There's an old saying that my colleagues and I in public health like to repeat, which is that, you know, a lie can make it halfway across the world before the truth has even had time to get its tennis shoes on. And we're seeing that more and more.
Yeah. And Dr. Milani, Dr. Shaw was anticipating my next question, which is how the political climate and those that polarization has made it harder for public health officials to try to get out more information, as well as the disinformation that we've seen since the start of the pandemic. Does it make your job harder? And more importantly, do you think that it has led to more hospitalizations, more infections, and even more death?
Yeah, without question, unfortunately, it has. And, you know, the virus doesn't really care what your political views are and who you are or where you live, for that matter. It's a virus. And what I think is that there is actually a sizable group in the middle who don't say much, but we hear from the extremes. And both extremes are concerning for different reasons, obviously different reasons. And they're not evenly distributed in every community. And what has helped is continued information from people, particularly like the Dr. Shaws of the world, being out there, being recognized, being trusted, and other messengers in certain communities that are trusted. And one of the things that has had a lot of effect with vaccination, you know, not uniformly, but it has had an effect, is discussions with a trusted primary care provider for people. And so one of the bits of advice I have given is for people to really seek out messages from trusted people. But again, it's difficult if you spend your life focused on social media and you're just bombarded with these messages, you are confused. And the other piece I've said is, like, don't spend all your day reading about COVID. You know, go outside, go for a walk, and mm-hmm. and do things to help make yourself comfortable, but also look at the science and stay open-minded to it. Stay open-minded to vaccination, for that matter. But this is a problem, and unfortunately, it seems to be quite an American problem.
And a comment on Facebook from a listener really gets to where I want to go next in this conversation, which is how the CDC and public health officials can, from this point on, do a better job in communicating. Tom Balicenti writes, I really wish public health folks had worked to manage expectations from the start and emphasize to people that the nature of this virus is that it will ebb and flow and mutate and evolve. And the guidance we're giving today won't necessarily be the guidance of tomorrow. So that's to be expected. As soon as the vaccines came out, there was a lot of irrational exuberance that the virus would soon be in the rearview mirror, even from health professionals who should have known better. So, Dr. Shaw, what do you say to Tom, and what do you think the CDC and other health officials should be doing now?
Well, I don't disagree with Tom in general. And indeed, I think one of the stock in trade of public health communication is to note, as Dr. Milani did just a moment ago, that everything that we say and all the advice that we give is based on what we know today, which could very much change. And that was the case for prior pandemics, whether it was Ebola, Zika virus, et cetera. In COVID, though, there seems to have been this notion that what we know and say today will be eternally true, and you will be held against what you say forever and ever. And we see that when it comes to things like masking, et cetera. I concur with Tom that public health officials ought to do a better job providing guardrails around what it is that they know and indicating, for example, what the magnitude of an effect is or what the degree of uncertainty is in any pronouncement they make. Now, I get why public health officials don't do that all the time. No one really wants to get up there and say, hey, here's what I think you should do, but there's a 70% chance I could be wrong. That's not exactly the thing that spurs people to action or to follow you, but that is what we've got to do. The other thing I think public health officials and perhaps anyone out there needs to do a better job of is being straight when it comes to what we know and what we don't know, and acknowledging what we don't know and couple that with what we're trying to do to get an answer. All too often when we are asked questions in public health, we obfuscate. And my cardinal rule is I try to stick with, which is if someone asks me what time it is, I don't tell them how to build a clock. I just try to tell people what time it is, even if it's not what they wanted to hear.
Ah, that's a good way of putting it. So, Dr. Milani, what about you? I mean, I take your point that messages from trusted people tend to land better and be more effective, and people definitely don't like to be preached to. We have studies that show that, even with the COVID vaccine. So how do public health officials navigate that? How do you give that message and be a trusted source without being preachy?
Yeah, well, you know, I actually think that a lot of people in public health have been good messengers since the beginning and have said, listen, this isn't a short-term thing. But whether people wanted to hear that or not is difficult. And of course, I do think that the notion that, well, once we hit 70% vaccination, we're going to be done was certainly a message that was out there and, you know, again, turned out to not be correct. But I do think people want to hear optimism and the fact that we can do a lot of things. We just have to adjust and be flexible, and we need to take care of each other and make good decisions and really think about that in terms of the health of our community, of our state, of our nation. some of the things that are very practical are getting information out there regularly. And if you have a website, like a lot of state agencies do, or in our case, University of Michigan, we have this campus website, is making sure that that information has good timestamps and that it's up to date. And that's a full-time job. We actually have phenomenal communications partners who are fielding questions and trying to keep things up to date, because there is such a demand for good information. But, you know, ultimately, this is imperfect because what we're doing is so difficult. But I think if you can continue to say, this is what we know, this is what we don't know, next week it might be a little different, but we're moving in the right direction. And I believe we are moving in the right direction. I think it's a world different from last year. But there's a long way to go. And frankly, we may be having some of these same conversations a year from now.
And Dr. Malani, talk a little bit about how you have adapted your own approach in how you talk about the virus. And also just to give our listeners an idea of what they can expect, the approach might change again, especially as the Delta variant changes.
Well, you know, one of my messages, Kimberly, is that we're not powerless against this virus. And I think that's an important one. The basics work. This is not a, you know, this is, we're going to have the same situation as Florida. I actually don't think that we will in Michigan, although, you know, things can change. New variants can emerge or vaccines could become less effective. But right now, the basics work. And that's part of the message, is vaccinate everyone who's eligible. And because things have changed, wearing masks indoors is important. But part of my personal messaging is also to remind people that COVID is not the only risk to our health. And I say it every day, every week, and particularly because I'm thinking about a college campus and a community where loneliness and social isolation are also huge risks to personal health, and that we can do both. But we have to be thoughtful about how we do it and not take unnecessary risks. But we also do need to work together to get back to essential activities, especially 18 months later. I mean, my son, who's a student at the University of Michigan, hasn't been in a classroom in 18 months.
Yeah. Yeah. Dr. Shaw, what about you? How have you adapted your approach and how you talk about the pandemic, and what, how might that approach continue to change?
Well, I want to underscore my appreciation for Dr. Molani's point that we're not powerless against it. I think that's really important. I've changed my approach to communicating in two ways. The first is, there's sometimes this notion that when a skeptic or someone who disagrees with you asks a question, the right response is to deluge them in data and facts, almost the way that a high school debater would do. And that, in the history of recorded thought, I don't think has ever changed anyone's mind. I think it maybe makes the person who says all of that stuff feel a little better to have punched down, but it doesn't really change anyone's mind. And so I have tried to treat even the most skeptical, aggressively skeptical question calmly and with respect, and to answer it both with a mixture of science as well as a mixture of allegory. And I think that's a better way to get folks on board. The other thing that I think is important as we go into these subsequent phases of the pandemic is earlier on, you know, last year, the risk of COVID was somewhat equally distributed. Now, certain folks had chronic medical conditions, putting them at higher risk, but pre-vaccine, we were all at risk. Post-vaccine, the risk is differently distributed. And thus, our concept, our conception of safety is a lot different. Nowadays, I don't really try to make pronouncements about what is safe and what is not safe. What I try to do is to ask folks who call, write, what have you, I try to say, all right, what are the priorities in your life that you want to do? And how can public health help you do them more safely? If spending time indoors with your friends is a priority, how can we help you do that? If being outside at a concert is a priority, what kind of things can we give you to equip you to do that? So it's less about what is safe and what is not safe in a binary fashion, and more about what can we equip you to do that will provide the maximum safety in light of your priorities.
Okay, that is Dr. Nirav Shah, director of the Maine CDC. I know you've been very busy, so I really appreciate you taking the time.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And Dr. Preethi Malani, Chief Health Officer at the University of Michigan, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.